I was reading in the news, there was an opinion paper, Biden's 7 lies for the day. And that was based on the State of the Union address that we just had. State of the Union address. Kezia, when she was at the ER, when they started calling her name and she was hurting and she was in pain, and she's only 2. I'm not Kezia. I'm not Kezia. She didn't want to be called by the doctor people because she was at hurting. How many of you know Coco the gorilla? You heard of Coco the gorilla? Yeah, she died in 2008 at age 46. She had a vocabulary of 1,000 signs that she could make to communicate with people, and she understood 2,000 words. One day she got upset. And as gorillas are, they're strong. Ripped out the sink, just tore it off the wall. And when she was addressed about it, she signed, "The cat did it." She's had kittens, and she's very careful and gentle with the kittens. Signed, "The cat did it." There was a TV program by Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and in fact, it's still going on today. But a few years ago, he did an audience response, and he went out and talked to passerbys to share their impressions of the president's State of the Union speech. This was Mr. Obama's speech. They happily joined in, sharing their likes and dislikes, even to making comments about some of the congressional floor having fallen asleep, adding commentary about Mr. Obama's tie, and faking a heart attack at the end of the speech for emphasis. One fellow allowed that he lied a bit for not staying awake for the entire presentation. The TV program by Jimmy Kimmel was titled Lie Witness News. Lie Witness News, because the problem was the speech hadn't taken place. It was going to take place that night. They said they saw it. They heard it. They made comments about it. There's an article by a Dr. Nan, a PhD from UCLA, who has a doctorate in special education. She wrote a piece called Nation of Liars. And she writes, Nation of Liars, are we? I am astounded by a recent person on the street interview that was aired on a late night TV program. Here, the interviewer asked a number of ordinary people what they thought of the President Obama's State of the Union address last night, except the speech hadn't happened yet. The ones they interviewed had all the answers, ranging from, "It was great, I was expecting more," to you name it. Liars. Because the only answer to the interview question was, "What are you talking about? The speech is tonight." She writes, this little entertainment piece says a lot about how people fabricate answers to save face. In this case, those questioned didn't want to appear ignorant or uninformed, so they simply made up a response. What does it take for this many people to think it's okay to lie right to your face? I'll tell you my answer. It takes an atmosphere where lies are considered to be socially acceptable. It takes a climate where people lie every day. And sometimes others buy it, and sometimes they don't. But when they're caught expounding an erroneous fact and ask for a source, they simply make up that too. A nation of liars. Honesty was not a fad. Honesty used to be the best policy. I grew up with that. Whenever I got into trouble with my parents, it was always best to tell the truth because they're going to find me out anyway. As brilliant as I thought I was always found out, and the punishment for lying was worse than the punishment for whatever I did. The interviewed showed that lying was their social norm. That was what they did. Lying appears omnipresent in our society, everywhere, in every discipline. This is by Dr. Gregory Jantz, also a PhD in psychologist and social commentator. He says, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." Of course, he didn't write that. He didn't write that. Well, Sir Walter Scott did. He said, the Scottish novelist, Walter Scott, may be mouldering, which that's a slow decay or disintegrate by neglect type thing. He may be mouldering in his grave for almost 200 years, but we pretty much nail that quote when it comes to lying. Lying can lead to a real mess, a tangled web. Just look at the news. A member of Congress, after sending out a really stupid picture of himself in his underwear on Twitter, this happened, I remember this, and about lying about it. Initially, he said his Twitter account had been hacked. When asked point blank by a reporter if the picture was him, "Is that you?" he responded, "You know, I can't say with certitude. I can't say with certitude." Who talks like that? Well, politicians. This writer says, "At that point, I said to myself, liar. As a nation of liars, we're all too familiar with lies. We've got the sports figures who purported not to use steroids, only to find out that they did. I was taken up by Lance Armstrong, the bicyclist who had health issues, and I was on his side and rah, rah, go, go." And then he goes on Oprah and said, "Yeah, I took him. I lost all respect for the man." All respect for the man. As a nation, we are accustomed to being lied to. We've come to expect it. We've also accustomed to lying, and it appears we've passed this trait on to our kids. An ethics study among teenagers found that 48% of boys and 35% of girls lied to save money. 80% lied to a parent about something significant. And, of course, it's difficult to get complete accurate numbers because 25% of them lied about lying. They lied about lying. That's what we do. We're a nation of liars. And we expect to be lied to. And then we think about our own state of affairs. And we have to think, why do we lie? Why do we lie? Why go about the idea that we're going to lie about something? Especially something that doesn't matter. I didn't. Well, Jimmy Kimmel comes up to me. "Well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear it." Maybe I'll hear it later tonight. Instead of, "I don't want to appear the fool. I must have heard it. It happened. Therefore, ooh, this is my feelings." And then 92% of those kids who took that test or survey were satisfied about their personal ethics and character. So our kids may be lying, but at least they've learned to feel good about themselves. In another article, there's just a wealth of material on the internet if you want to pursue this. This is by Kelly Boggs, also a nation of liars. He says, "Americans are cheating and lying more than ever," reports Callahan in his book, The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead. He says, Callahan's research confirms findings from a variety of sources. In 1998, U.S. Today survey found that dishonesty is a routine practice for a majority of Americans. While not a daily activity, most who participated in the newspaper's poll indicated that they kept their lying to insignificant levels. My lying is down here at the lower level. I'm going to just only lie about certain things down here that don't really matter. But I'm going to lie about these things. Maybe two or three times a week, they say. Which adds up to 104 to 156 times a year, people lie. In 1994, Money Magazine reported 32% of the U.S. citizenship said that they would not report $2,000 in cash earned on a sideline job. I'll just keep that away from the government. I'm not going to pay any taxes on that. 1991, while he was a junior at Rutgers University, Michael Moore, not the Michael Moore who does the documentaries, authored a book called Cheating 101, Benefits and Fundamentals of Earning the Easy A. It's 87 pages at $6 a pop. You can go on the internet and find its existence. I did. It's currently out of print. Immediately, he sold 1,000 copies in 5 days. And subsequent printings all have sold out. Moore writes, he says, I don't think I'm making a cheater out of anybody. It's their choice, like drunk driving. It's only wrong if you get caught. It's only wrong if you get caught. In a 2002 report, the Joseph Institute of Ethics found that during the previous year, 74% of high school students indicated cheating, 81% said they lied to their parents, and 83% said they lied to a teacher. America, it appears, has become the proving ground of the 18th century poet, playwright, and actress Suzanne Freeman, or Suzanne Carroll, depending on what time in her career it is. She had a cynical assessment of society. Lying is a thriving vocation. 'Tis my opinion, every man cheats in his way, and he is only honest if not discovered. What an interesting take on our society. And what an interesting impact it has even on us. One time I was called to what we call Mahogany Row. When years I was working, Mahogany Row is the directors and the vice presidents, and Fred, you need to get down there. And on the way down there, I go, what did I do, and how do they know? And I started to think, what was my latest foible? What was my latest misstep? And I found myself trying I was trying to figure out how to present myself for whatever mistake it was in a good light. And I stopped going, I'm preparing to lie. I just stopped. And I went into the meeting with, I just cleared my head. I said, whatever happens, happens. Turns out they wanted me to take on another assignment. I was doing good. My immediate reaction was, I need to move this thing in my favor. I don't know what I did wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. In an age of universal deceit, telling the truth seems to be a revolutionary act. We know in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, won't go there right now, but we have the writing of the royal law. The ninth commandment says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. It is part of who we are, part of our whole format on our thinking, that we don't lie. I was talking with a golfer recently, and he had the scorecard, and his players are giving him the score, and he said, at one point, I didn't want to count a stroke of mine. And then I realized I was going to cheat my friends. Well, what good would that do? We have this need to look good, be good, and sometimes we end up with prevarication, lying. I've got a whole list of words here somewhere on what we do. There was a story that kind of helps, I guess. Coming home from work, a woman stopped at the corner deli to buy a chicken for supper. Then, usually that sounds like New York, because you got the corner deli in New York. You got the streets. The butcher grabbed the last bird he had and tossed it on a scale. Peering at the numbers, he announced the weight. The woman calculated the fowl to be too small for the meal she had planned. She asked the butcher if he had anything larger. Without saying a word, he removed the chicken from sight and pretended to grope under the counter. After a moment, he feigned searching. The butcher produced the same chicken and placed it on a scale. He said, "This one weighs 1 pound more." The woman thought for a moment and said, "Good, I'll take both." It seems that we live in a culture where it has become comfortable with deception and lying. And we should remember that the lie we tell today just might be the one we're told tomorrow and we have to defend later. Lying is all in our nature. What does Jeremiah 17:9 say? At college, we used to quote this a lot to each other. Jeremiah 17:9. "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Who can know it?" That's where we are. The lying is all around us. We can't escape it. It's on TV. It's in our entertainment. It's in our politics. It's in our schools. It's in our families. Lying is pandemic throughout society. And if we're not careful, we could get swept up into and caught up in lying. Maybe not the out-and-out big falsehoods that could cause great mental anguish and discomfort, but in the day-to-day little details, little deceits that get us through the day. Well, today we're going to address lying, the unintended impact that it has on us and others, and more importantly, our relationship with God and lying. I'll jump over here. Lying has been defined as a statement at variance with the mind. This is what I believe. This is on the inside. And what I give to you is not with what I believe on the inside. It's a false statement made with the intention of deceiving. Now, if we go back to Aristotle in his writings under ethics, he says, lying is never allowed. Well, one of his students, Plato, wrote in the Republic, he was more accommodating. For the good of patients, doctors lie, or for the good of the commonwealth, the government lies. And therefore, it should be situation ethics. And today's philosophers are divided. In one study, it was noted that the moral reasons to tolerate lies have mostly to do with avoiding conflict. And I think that's true. We put up something that would stop a conflict. An ethical code will often specify when the truth is required and when not. You go to court, will you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Please, do. And what they find is that still, even though they claim that those words, necessarily they don't. There is a conventional lying that takes place. We lie in order to avoid or terminate undesired social encounters. We lie telling a dying person what they want to hear. That happened in my family. My brother-in-law, his dad was dying, and the family decided not to tell him he was dying, that he was just sick. They didn't want to stress him. I told my family, "I will tell you what the doctor says. I'm not going to have you tell me what the doctor says. I have to be able to have the truth so I can make my decisions." But they were content to tell his father, "No, you're just sick. You'll get over it." We lie to conceal or breach of a taboo. Most people engage in conventional lying, the telling of the little white lies, the little white things. Got to ask the question, so why do people lie? Some do it out of fear. Some do it out of fear. I'm looking at my time. I'll just say they do it out of fear where they don't want to get caught, or they're being caught, or they're trying to get away with something. They're trying to deceive. Some do it out of habit. Some people have gotten to the point where they cannot tell the truth. It is addictive. That it is second nature not to tell the truth. Other people tell lies through modeling. They see others lie. They see others having an advantage over them, and they see others getting away with it, so they want to have the same advantage. Some lie for attention. I did that. Anybody else? High school? I won't tell you about it. Because something was missing, and I wanted attention. Some people lie just to get what they want. They won't get their desires unless they work out the details for themselves, unless they manipulate, create the opportunity through any and every means, and they believe lying gives them control. Enter situation ethics. The philosophy that lying is acceptable gives a certain set of events and conditions. Truthfulness and honesty and ethical behavior has to do with the perceived or intended result of lying. One believes that if he tells a lie, it will produce a good result. The individual becomes the arbiter of truth, the authority, the judge of right and wrong behavior, seeing that the end justifies the means. We know where that comes from. That certainly doesn't come from the Bible. Let's jump in before we get too far afield and jump in with God's word and God's view. Proverbs 6. Exodus 20. Exodus 20. You'll also find the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 5. Very simply, Exodus 20, verse 16, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. He could have simply said, don't lie. But what God is using here is an example to say, hey, this is the worst case. You're lying to your neighbor. You're lying to someone else. You're hurting their reputation. You're deceiving and hurting your neighbor. You're speaking unjustly. This is personal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. That is important. That's the foundation. But I do want to go, we're going to go deep into this. Now, Proverbs 6. You know, when our Creator says that He likes something, we should consider that. I mean, He has His druthers. Jesus Christ had a special friend, a closer friend. He loved His disciples. But John was closer to Jesus than the other disciples, druthers. What if God says, I hate something? What if He says, I hate? And the word hate means to detest, that it's odorous. The root word is for an enemy. We should really take note of that. Proverbs 6, verse 16. These six things the Lord hates, and the word does mean hate. Seven are an abomination to Him. An abomination means it's repulsive, it's loathsome, it is with disgust, it is vile before Him. Seven are an abomination to Him. A proud look, we will come back to that. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deceives, devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. These are things that God hates. Two refer to communication. A lying tongue and one a false witness who speaks lies. You know the foundation upon which that is built? It was the very first one. Pride. Pride is the foundation of all lies. Pride in the self, pride in what I want, pride in the me. You know, when God created everything before human beings, He had perfection in His kingdom. The perfection by the name of Lucifer. Perfect in all His ways, until pride was found in Him. And then He became, first in John, He became the father of lies. And his encounter with Adam and Eve, he lied. He had half-truths. Half-truth is still a lie. He became the father of lies. Pride is the foundation upon lying. Six things God hates: a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, and a false witness who speaks lies, one who sows discord among the brethren. God hates lies. He hates pride, the proud look. Pride brings us to the precipice constantly of making mistakes. Proverbs 8, verse 13. Proverbs 8, verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Same word. Same word. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. The perverse mouth talks about those who deceive, those who lie. It becomes a way of life. Proverbs 12, 22. Proverbs 12, 22, a few pages over. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. What we have here is a very strong reaction to pride and lying. What is the impact of speaking in variance with our internal moral standards? Funny way of just saying, what's the impact of lying? Well, we lose trust. Right away, you don't trust a word the person says. If we lie to our spouse, if we lie to our employer, if we lie to our friends, if we lie to our neighbors, we lose trust. But God says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if we're lying, then we're lying to God as well, and he doesn't trust us. He doesn't trust us. You know, a good name is more precious than anything we own. I can give you money, I can give you gold, I can give you things, but don't take my name. Proverbs 22:1 says a good name is better than gold. Or I don't want to misquote it. Don't want to do that. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. A good name. You want to be known as one who is truthful. Trust. Once trust has been lost, it's hard to get it back. People who have been lied to have been deceived, and they've been hurt. Adam and Eve. We can start there. The great deceiver worked on Adam and Eve, and they were told lies, and their actions brought about great hurt. The person lying experiences damage because it breaks down their own character. The more a person lies, the easier it is to lie. The easier it is to save face. The easier it is to run away from potential conflict because I don't want the conflict. I just as soon lie. Lying shows disrespect to the person lied to, disrespect to the person lying, and shows disrespect to Jesus Christ and our Father. Matthew 25. Matthew 25. This all started because of an opinion piece from Mr. Biden's State of the Union, the seven lies he said today. I don't know if they were lies. I didn't read it. I just took the title. Matthew 25, verse 34. Well, it would help if I was in 25. There we go. Two pages off. Yes. This is a wonderful example that God gives us. He says, then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you, my blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. And I was in prison and you came to me. Boy, those are character attributes of a Christian, of Christ's follower. Then the righteous will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and came to you? And the king will answer and say to him, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it to me. Wow. When we deal with one another, how we deal with one another, whether with care and concern and love and compassion, God sees that we have done it to him. If we lie to one another, we are sending deception God's way. If that's what we've done to one another, then that's what we're doing to Christ. We didn't feed him. We didn't clothe him. We deceived him. We lied to him. But he says, you know, if we are Christians and we do these things, we have compassion and care and we share, then we have done it to him. How important is that? How important is that? Under impacts of speaking at variance with internal moral standards, we build and develop a lack of faith. We're no longer relying on God. We're trying to finagle. We're trying to manufacture things our way. 1 Timothy 4. Verse 1. Now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times you will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. There, the world is being deceived. Well, Revelation 12:9, 1 John 5:19, I harp again on our adversary who deceives the entire world in every discipline and then holds emotional sway over every aspect of this world, giving heed to depart from faith, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. Having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. When we continue to prevaricate, to twist, to distort, to deceive, then our conscience is becoming seared. And what happens when you sear meat? It locks in all the juices, right? You burn or seal the top and the bottom of your steak. You do that long enough for something that's flesh, and it dies. You don't want to hold your hand down on a pan and sear your hand, because you'll kill it. You'll kill the skin, the material, the cells. And when they become so seared, they become inured to God's Spirit. When our conscience is so seared, we don't hear God's Spirit in our heads anymore saying, this is the way, walk you in it. We become so distanced from God. Lying then can become a way of life. Lying can become a way of life. Acts 5. Page 961 in my Bible. Acts 5. We're going to read about a couple who lying became a way of life. But a certain man, verse 1, named Ananias and Sapphira, his wife, sold possessions, and he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. Nothing wrong with that. They're giving a free will offering. They sold the material that they owned, and they brought part of it before the apostles. Nothing wrong with that. And brought a certain part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? They lied as to how much they were given. They lied to look good before the apostles. While it remained, verse 4, while it remained, was it not yours? And after it was sold, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. Then Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. So great fear came upon all those who heard these things. And the young men rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. Now it was about 3 hours later when his wife came in, not knowing what happened. And Peter answered, tell me whether you sold the land or for this much. And she said, yeah, for that much. And Peter said to her, how is it that you have agreed together to test the Spirit of the Lord? Look, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out. Then immediately she fell down at his feet and breathed her last. Great fear came upon them. While it was in their hands, there was no need to lie. It was a free will offering. They could said, look, I sold it for 100, I'm giving you 50. Not a problem. I sold it for 50. And I'm keeping 50, but I'm not telling you about it. However it worked out. They were lying to look good. Obadiah, let's go to Obadiah. First one there, read. When was the last time we were at Obadiah? Obadiah has the foundation. No, I can't find it. Has the foundation that pride is the answer. I haven't been here a while. Okay. All right. No, it's just one page. Obadiah. There we go. Obadiah 1. Well, one chapter. In verse 3, the pride of your heart has deceived you. The pride of your heart has deceived you. Pride blinds us to truth. When I think back to Adam and Eve, I think they wanted to hear some of the lies. Because Eve especially was deceived. Pride blinds us to truth. And the lies then get through. And then we eventually believe the lies. We eventually believe the lies. But pride is the foundation for lies. And we know we go back and we know what God hates. And that the first one he hates is a proud look, the pride. He has seen what happens. People can be self-deceived. In the end time, there's going to be a group who is self-deceived. Join me in Revelation 3, please. You could almost hear the pride in how this is written. Revelation 3. In the end time, there will be a group that will be self-deceived. Talking about the Laodicean church, you know, this is the church circuit at the time, the seven churches that were on the mail route, and the letter here in Revelation that was written by John was sent to all seven churches. Verse 14, and to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creator of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were cold or hot. It's not that it's one or the other. It's both. You're hot toward what is right and cold toward what is wrong. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. You do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. They have spiritual blindness. They have deceived themselves. They have lied to themselves to the point where they believe they've got it made. I am rich and become wealthy and have need of nothing. I counsel you, buy from me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. Self-deception is the worst deception that there is. It's a terrible thing. Self-deception. James 1, verse 22. James 1, verse 22. He says, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. There are times when we could hear something and say, that doesn't work for me. Sometimes we hear God's word and say, that person needs it. I don't need to hear that. We deceive ourselves. Be doers of the word. Listen to it. Act on it. Make it part of us. Not hearers only. It has to be in the heart. Otherwise, we're deceiving ourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing the natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. Self-deception. Self-deception. Verse 25, but he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not a forgetful hearer but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in all in what he does. How important it is not to be self-deceived. Jesus Christ spoke very strongly against hypocrisy. He talked about the liars who were in charge, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes. And you'll find that in Matthew 15, Matthew 23, Mark 7, where he takes them to task for them saying one thing and doing another. Hypocrisy. He took them to task. But the question is, to what end? You go to Matthew 5 and Luke 6. We are told to give our answers as yes or no. We're not to prevaricate, not to stretch out our answers, but to tell the truth. We know that out of the heart, the seat of personal moral integrity, the mouth speaks. We talk with what's in our heart. And then we get down to the big warning, the end warning. Let's go to Revelation 28. Revelation 21:8. Anybody going to Revelation 28, we need to talk. Revelation 21. And verse 7. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son, or could be translated my child, my son, daughter. What a wonderful promise. He who overcomes, I will be his God, you will be my child. But, verse 8, the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. That's a major warning. It's a huge warning. It says cowardly, those who are more afraid of disturbing society than obeying God. I know in my early years, I trembled at the thought of telling my boss I needed time off for Sabbath. I trembled at the idea of explaining why I would be taken off for the Feast of Tabernacles. Now it's such a given that don't care. But the cowardly, unbelieving, those who hear and don't do, those who are abominable, those who do things which are vile before God, murderers, sexually immorality, sorcerers and idolaters, all flow together, and all liars. The impact is God cannot trust a liar. For out of the heart, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Individuals who are liars will not be in God's kingdom. God already had perfection at one time. He already had perfection. And when that perfection decided to go south, I think we all learned a lesson, including our Father. Page 9. A side note, let me not lose my place here. A side note is, it's hard work to lie. No, they used MRIs, functional magnetic resonance imaging, and researched and discovered that 7 areas of activation were required in the brain when lying, but only 4 if you told the truth. I think that kind of supports what Mark Twain said. Mark Twain said, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. We're all affected by lies. At work, there was a man who was making a presentation, and he was not prepared. So he ad-libbed. And he ad-libbed some answers to a very knowledgeable audience, and he was clobbered. He was asked later by his boss why he tried to snow the meeting. And candidly, he said, I don't know. He says, I was looking like a fool and I wanted to protect myself. And I just made it worse. It was a long time before this individual was allowed to present to that audience because they lost trust in his words. They lost trust. I already told you about Coco. I love that when she blamed the cat. Blamed the cat. There was a writer, Lacey Rose, in 2005. She titled an article, Lying is Good for You. And she says, if I told you lying was good for you, you probably wouldn't believe me, but trust me, I'm not lying. Simply put, we lie because it works. When we do it well, we get what we want. We lie to avoid awkwardness or punishment. We lie to maintain relationships and please others. And of course, most of all, we lie to please ourselves. Whether we're embellishing our credentials or strengthening our stories, we often tell untruths to make others appear and feel better. We're not in the world of feel better, are we? We should be in the world of feel the truth. To what's right. And apparently I already took you to my conclusion. No. Okay, Revelation 22. Revelation 22. Verse 14. Of course, we're at the very end of the book, and these words are, they carry so much weight considering this is talking of the end time. Verse 14, blessed are those who do his commandments, including the 9th, not to bear false witness, that they may have the right to the tree of life, God's Holy Spirit, and may enter through the gates into the city. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and those who are sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and whoever loves and practices a lie. It is again mentioned that liars will not be in God's kingdom. You know, why get a little bothered about maybe the little white lies or something that protects and doesn't hurt somebody's feelings? Because it hurts us, the speaker. It damages our character. It puts us at variance with God, who wants us to be truthful from the inside out. Harmless little white lies exist, and they could make us miss God's kingdom. They we could miss the kingdom of God. Let's go to John 8 in closing. Yay, he's closing. Shh, he's shutting up. John 8, verse 31. Why is lying such an issue? John 8. John 8, verse 31. Then Jesus said to the Jews who believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The truth shall make you free. This is so true, not just in a religious sense, but we are free from misunderstanding, free the words of God, free from misunderstanding the traditions of religion. We know the plan that God has for mankind. It gives us comfort and encouragement to go forward. We are freed from lies and hypocrisy. We are freed from Satan's influence over us. We are freed from living and breathing and speaking lies. We are truthful for one another. More importantly, we are truthful with ourselves and we are truthful with God. You shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. I can't imagine going back to my life when I was 14 and didn't know what I know today. I have great comfort and peace. Oh, gone through a whole host of things like Mr. Taylor was talking about, the difficulties we have. We all have difficulties. I mean, life hasn't been totally easy, but because I know tomorrow, because I know what's coming, well, I know the end result, I know the end of the book, I'm at peace because I have that truth. I emphasize all this because this world is based on lies. And this last week, that article, The Seven Lies of President Biden, Katsia saying she's not Katsia because she didn't want to be treated, she was hurting too much. A gorilla that learned to lie. And conversations I've had over the last month brought me to realize, you know, probably we should just touch on this topic. In his commentary called Lying, Jonathan Wallace shares some thoughts, and I'll end with this. He writes, "I hate being lied to. Short of violence, it is the worst thing you could do to me. Not because of God or the Ten Commandments or the universal moral perspectives, percepts, but yes, but because of those. The reason that I hate lies is because I wish to navigate carefully through life, and to do so, I must be able to calculate my true position. When you lie to me, you know your position, but you have given me false data which obscures mine. Lying is theft. When you tell me something which I take to be true, and as a result I invest my time, my money, and even my care, you have stolen these things from me because you obtained them with false information. Lying creates inequity. Since you also do not like being lied to, I have never known anyone who wanted to be deceived. You have acted as if there were two classes of humans, you with the right to lie and everyone else who must be truthful to you so that you will not lose your way. Lying treats people as a means to an end that you wish to accomplish, not as an end in itself." Ross Perot, you remember years ago he was running for president, got caught in his own lies, by the way. He wrote that lying is concerning because you cannot, where lying is concerned, you cannot separate the spheres. He did not want adulterers working for him because any man who will lie to his wife will lie to me. You can test this assertion by asking yourself, why wouldn't he lie? Because his wife is a thing to him, not a person. There is no answer to the question likely to inspire continuing confidence in the individual. Lying corrupts the most important quality of my being human. My ability to make free, rational choices. Each lie I tell contradicts the part of me that gives moral worth, and that my lies rob others of their freedom to choose. Lying has great impact on us. There's a maxim that was attributed to Mark Twain but probably was more of a Jonathan Swift back in the 1700s. He, either one, wrote, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is just lacing up its boots." Lies fly. People want to hear lies and they spread them. Truth is harder. Truth is harder. Mark Twain also wrote, "I have a higher and grander standard of principle than George Washington. He said he could not tell a lie. I can and choose not to." One of the hardest things to tame is our tongue. One of the hardest things to tame is human nature. The solution to taming it is self-choice. We choose to be honest. We choose to have integrity above our hurt, above our embarrassment, above our fear. We choose honesty and integrity. Truthful people don't have to have perfect memories. Truthful people can give an answer even if it's "I don't know" without feeling guilty. Truthful people live free from worry about being caught in a falsehood. Being truthful to ourselves, being truthful with others, being truthful with God, anything else can keep us out of the kingdom. Ninth commandment, very simple. Do not bear false witness with your neighbor. Hope that was helpful.